High Island Blues, written by Anne Cleves and read by Sean Barrett. The moral right of the author has been asserted. Chapter 1. Cecily had wanted George there at 9, had insisted on it, so he had left home in the dark. It was impossible to argue with Cecily. In the end, he had time to kill, and he took the last 10 miles slowly, driving down straight lanes between potato fields. Miles away across the flat land, a line of poplars broke the horizon, shadows in the gloom. There was an icy drizzle. When he came to a village, there were still lights on in the red brick houses, and a group of children, shrouded in hoods and scarves, waiting for the school bus, stood miserably in the doorway of Fred's mini-mart. He passed battery chicken sheds, an immense glass house, a sugar beet processing plant. The agricultural heart of England, he thought with depression. The heart of the agricultural industry, at least. There was a second, identical village. A bridge over the canal, and then the turning so overgrown that he almost missed it. No sign. Lady Cecily Jessop did not need to advertise her presence. No gate. An attempt had been made to fill the potholes with gravel, and he had an image of Cecily herself with a wheelbarrow and shovel doing the work. It wouldn't have surprised him. She had told him once that she disliked employing menials. This was not, he thought, through any liberal notion of social justice, but out of meanness. Why pay someone to perform a task one could easily perform oneself? Why then, he wondered, is she prepared to pay me? The summons had come 2 days before, by fax. It was written in the third person, as if she were royalty. Lady Cecily Jessop wishes to consult Mr. Palmer Jones professionally. She would be grateful if he could attend the Duca's at 9 a.m. on March the 5th. The formality had been broken by a handwritten note at the bottom. I'm bloody busy at the moment, so don't be late. He had tried to contact her for more details, but she was too busy, it seemed, to answer the telephone. Molly had been affronted by the rudeness of the fags, and by the fact that she had not been invited. Ignore it, she said. If she wants us to work for her badly enough, she'll be in touch again. And you can tell her we're a partnership. We make joint decisions about the cases we take on. George, however, had been unable to ignore the fags. Since his retirement from the Home Office, he had been asked to serve on environmental working parties and committees. He had met Cecily Jessop at these meetings and had been impressed by her tenacity and her ability to drink whiskey by the tumblerful and still talk sense. She was a celebrity, and he was flattered, despite himself, that she had called on him for help. He was curious to see what she wanted of him. She called the house the mouldering heap, though he knew she felt an affection for it. Why else would she stay on? She had no close relatives and could have sold it without causing offence. She wasn't the type to feel any obligations to maintain the ancestral home. Maintenance came low on her list of priorities. It'll see me out, she said as it crumbled about her. He had visited her there before and thought she was like a squatter, making the best of the discomfort. It was another example of her meanness. She was a wealthy woman, but she preferred to camp out in one room with a tin bucket to catch drips from the ceiling. There was no reply from the grand door under the pillared portico, though he heard the bell echo inside. He had expected none. Cecily disliked casual callers. He found her in the kitchen, drinking rum in hot milk and smoking a pipe. She had left her Wellingtons at the door and wore hand-knitted woolen socks with holes in the toes, a pleated tweed skirt, and a sweater with a Fair Isle pattern, which George supposed had been knitted by Vanessa. Vanessa had been her friend and companion since they had met as girls during the war. Vanessa had stuck by Cecily through her 2 divorces and her drinking. It was Vanessa who brought a semblance of order to the house. My housekeeper, Cecily called her, and Vanessa accepted that without a fuss, though George doubted that it was a paid position. Rum, George, Cecily said. You need something to keep out the cold. It might be March, but it's bloody freezing. No, thank you, Cecily, George said politely. Coffee will be fine.